Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Into the Cave. I got some good news and some weird news. So if you followed TLE or my timeline, you know the week that I had, which was awesome, but I got stranded in Dallas for a few days, so I barely had time to edit, and I certainly didn't have time to record the episode that I wanted to record. So throughout this episode, you're going to hear me reference July 4th because my intention was to put this out with a couple of other episodes on July 4th, but things happen. I'll do something different for July 4th. Instead, today, you're going to get a conversation between me and Michael of Barbary, the stateless cook. We are going to talk about meat. Meat in all its forms. Everybody loves meat. Vegans, fuck off. Well, that's just, I like you vegans as long as you're not one of them. I don't want to be one of those guys. All right, let's get into it. You know the deal. You're a professional.
Also, I've listened to this for a very long time.
Dude, it freaks me out that there are people who have been along for the ride for as long as I have. It's like, oh my God, like, how are you not part of the show? You know what I mean? Yeah,
right?
Like, if you've been around since day one, you're literally part of the show, not part of the audience.
Yeah, pretty much. The one that I had this realization the other day, and I thought it was kind of funny, is there are going to be people coming along who are going to know Carr is Carr, but they don't know why.
Yes, correct. That is weird, like, isn't that? That's an interesting thing you bring up.
Because they won't know that he used to be Carr Camp because he had a Carr Camping, what was it, podcast, blog, or both, something like that.
Okay, so here's the story. So, I mean, I guess Carr, I don't think he's ever told this one, but I don't think he would give a shit about me telling it. So, Tom Woods, maybe 4 years ago, 5 years ago even, maybe even 6 years ago at this point. I don't know because I just found out Contra Krugman ended like a freaking year ago. So I'm totally out of the loop. So however long ago it was, Tom Woods was doing a thing where if you signed up for something he was running, you would get a free credit for like a website. Or something like that. It was something like a website hookup program that he was doing. And Carr emailed, and he got a website. So he had a website the whole time. And it was his Carr Camping blog. And I don't know if it still exists or not. I guess it doesn't, because from what I understand...
Yeah, he stopped paying for the hosting.
No, I think he turned it into the TLE website. That's my thought, because I've never seen this blog before, but I believe him when he says it exists. And also, this is like news, actually. Probably no one has ever heard this before, even though it's common news to the people who do this show. Carr actually had a podcast before this podcast.
Yeah, I remember that.
That's crazy, dude. I've never heard it either, is the craziest part. But they did a lot of, like, 50 episodes with him and his buddy.
I was about to say, didn't they do, like, 50 episodes? I remember you guys
talking about it. Yeah, they got pretty
far. Talking about it probably when you guys hit about episode 20 or something back in the days.
Oh, we did talk about it, huh?
Yeah, because you guys came up on, like, episode 20 or 25 or some shit like that. And he's like, yeah, you know, most podcasts, like, they only make it about 20 episodes, like,
So
we're doing real good. We've already gotten past that. You know, my old podcast, we got to about 50 before we stopped. So even if we get there.
I remember that. Wow, your memory is your memory excellent? Do people talk about how good your memory? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So that was incredible because I remember exactly that conversation. It was, I believe the number was 7. Tom Woods, I heard on a podcast, I think it might have been on... Oh, I can't remember whose podcast it was, but it's a close podcast to ours. Maybe it was Rollo and Slappy. And Tom, maybe it was Pete's show the first time Tom was on.
Yeah, I was going to say, has Tom been on Rollo and Slappy?
I don't remember, but Tom was congratulating the host of this show like, hey, man, you know the average podcast only makes it to 7. So the fact that you're – it might have been Pete because number 100 of Pete's show was hosted by – Tom Woods, or at least co-hosted by Tom Woods.
It sounds like something that would happen with them because, I mean...
So that was what I heard, 7 episodes. And you're absolutely right. It had to be around 20 where we were like, oh, we made it. We made it. But Carr was at 70 by that point.
Yep. Yeah. God, there were some wild things from way back.
Yeah, like what? Dude, my memory's so fried. Once you start getting it going, I'll remember.
Well, it's so fried. The one story that I still remember, which has pretty much led to the running gag from this point onward, was the fucking moose story that Carr told.
Oh my god, that is an insane story that he was confronted by a moose while he was camping and eyed it about several feet away. And the craziest part is, if I recall correctly, first time he told me that story, like, I didn't take it even slightly seriously. He's telling me a story about he was confronted like viciously by like an almost 2,000-pound animal, and I'm cackling like aha, and it led to the moosing joke. That's crazy, dude.
Oh yeah,
that's crazy. Hey, Oh no, go ahead.
I was just saying I have seen moose up close too, and they are. I mean, the good news is unless they're in rut, they're not particularly violent.
Uh-huh.
But
when they get in a rut, they start trying to like bang you.
Do you get them up by you? Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
They're all over the state up here.
So let me ask you a question. This is a great and pardon my pun, ham-fisted segment for us to get into.
Got it.
I wanted to bring you on because this probably by the time most of the listeners are hearing this has evolved into a July 4th Happy Sunday podcast. And I wanted to do a show about food, and I had you on because we've been cooking this idea for a while to talk about meat and in a very free form kind of way. That's the only way that I know how to run a show. So I'm going to segue us. In a very ham-fisted way towards that question. Can you eat moose?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh yeah?
So one thing we have to remember first off is a moose is just a different species of deer.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, I guess so. Sure.
So, yeah, you absolutely can eat them. People do all the time. I have not personally, though I very much so want to.
Have you spoken to someone who's eaten meat from a moose?
Yes, I believe my father has, first off.
Oh, your father has? What does he say about it? Is it like venison-y?
I don't recall, to be honest, because it's not something we've talked about in a little while, because we haven't had...
It's a wild meat, dude. Oh, yeah. Like I imagine. So I imagine it's incredibly lean and very gamey.
I would assume both of those things to be true. I mean, gamey is pretty much a guarantee because I mean all the gaminess is from anything is things from their diet affecting the taste of their meat. And so when you've got a wild animal like a moose who will eat just what the hell ever it comes across that it finds edible. It's going to give a very different taste to the meat. Like hell, even if you were to catch and kill and slaughter a wild cow, say some cattle, even a domestic breed, right? Like if some domestic cattle got loose, which happens pretty regularly, and you didn't manage to find them for 6 months or something like that, or longer maybe.
They get
all
weird.
Yeah, they'll get a different taste to their meat unless you, that won't necessarily be unpleasant, but it's going to be very distinctly different. Hmm. Unless you were to feed them the same kind of diet that they were usually getting when you had them, and do that for an extended period of time, and then all of the various different chemical compounds that were in what they were eating works themselves out of the meat just like anything else does, and then it'll taste like regular beef again. But that's one reason why goat meat tastes so different, because goats even domestic goats will eat fucking anything and do. So you have to be real careful.
What do you do, like, if you feed a goat meat? Does it taste extra goaty, do you think?
I mean, I don't think they would eat it because they're not carnivorous. They're not even omnivorous. But when it comes to vegetable matter, they're not picky. Like, there's a guy I work with. So I've gotten a summer job up where I live at a nursery. So we grow trees and everything like that. And it's a soil conservation nursery specifically. So we send out hundreds of thousands of trees every year.
Oh, right. I swear I thought you were talking about a nursery as in a school. Like, I was like, oh, you're working with kids. That's great.
No, that would be pretty cool.
You're growing them? I was like, hold on now.
No, that would be pretty cool. But no, we're talking about trees right now. And so some of the trees, the small trees, you know, these are only like 6, 7, 8 inches tall type of thing. So they're real small, only been grown a couple of years. Right. If they don't make the grade for us to sell them, we usually just throw them into a big compost pile, let it compost down, etc. Well, also, if they don't make grade, we can take them home. That's how I got 5 little eastern red cedar trees that I'm growing to plant around the property.
Oh, nice.
But so there's one guy I work with. He's got some goats. I don't know how many, but it's not a lot.
Okay.
Like, he'll take some of these trees home with him sometime to just feed to the goats.
They'll eat trees? Yeah. Jesus.
Wow. He'll feed the whole little tree to the goats. And
the eternal question of who wins, the giant boulder or the giant tree, is evidently the answer is the giant goat.
Yeah. Because it might also eat the boulder.
I have to tell you, man, I actually had lamb now for the first time in memory. I know I had lamb before, but I had lamb for the first time in memory recently where I made lamb chops, and it changed the game. I'll admit, it changed the game. I was like, wow, meat can taste like that. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
Yeah, so lamb is stuff, man. Is a wonderful, wonderful thing.
Oh, man.
And I mean, obviously the problem with lamb is they're very small because these are young sheep. Yeah, they're little babbies.
My rap name, Young Sheep.
Young Sheep? Little Sheep?
little Sheep. That's a great one. That's a great one. Little Sheep.
But, yeah.
I mean, it.
Perfect.
Perfect. Right, lock that one in. I'll write that one down.
But you know, obviously the other cuts from lamb are real small, so they're just not going to be a lot of meat. But anything you can do with a full grown animal, you can do with a lamb. It's just going to be on a much smaller scale. You know, roast legs, roast shoulders, the rib, you know, the chops, which are the ribs, obviously.
Is lamb a July 4th-er for you? Is that something you would consider to put out on July 4th?
Assuming I had the money to get it, yeah.
Oh, yeah? Like a lamb would you put on?
Sure. Absolutely. Ooh.
See, I don't think of lamb as a July 4th thing, but I think I could start thinking about it that way.
Yeah, like I said, the main reason I don't think I would is because it's expensive.
Sure.
And usually for July 4th or any of these big like summertime, late spring holidays, like they're party events, man. You usually have a bunch of people over, so you don't want to spend $50 a person to feed them. You want to spend like 5.
Unless you're Daddy Baller.
If you're Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos or something like that, and you've sold your soul to the devil for money.
I was going
to
say, you just bring out the jars of adrenochrome. You don't even need no need.
Fair point. We'll go with somebody a little less satanic then.
Yeah. Bezos, yeah. I'm not sure. I would bet Jeff Bezos hasn't ingested food in months.
Yeah.
Like you know, a lizard.
Yeah, I was just about to say, it's like, you know, a lot of the time we use the whole lizard people kind of as a joke thing.
Right.
But some of these people, and I'm using that term very loosely right now, I'm not entirely convinced they're not actual literal lizard people.
Now this is very interesting because this is a conversation about meat, and it's kind of, I forgot when you came on, but I wanted to talk to you about this in a kind of a serious way. There is very clearly a war on beef.
Oh, yeah.
100% there's a war on beef going on. And what I want to focus on with that war specifically is what you just touched on, that on the one end of the war is the lizard race from the beyond planets who want us to eat insects.
The bugs.
Insects, dude. Yeah, the bugs.
Mm-hmm. Bugs are plants.
And here's the thing. I respect people who eat bugs if it's within your cultural tradition. Go for it, my man. But what I don't respect is people coming in who have no cultural attachment to bugs and purely want to destroy the beef industry, trying to convince us all that bugs are a suitable replacement for beef. So please, all of your thoughts on that. When was the first time you became aware of the bug lizard man agenda against beef?
Jesus. Well, I mean, they've been against that for, Jesus, I don't even know, probably 15 or 20 years. They've just been getting a lot more vocal in the last 5, maybe.
You know why, right?
God, who knows? Because they're...
Yeah, there's several reasons. I said that, I was like, that's kind of leading. One of the reasons I think it is because of the environmentalist movement.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Which is
they're trying to get rid of the cows.
Absolute bunk.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean... that's a whole thing on its own, but in brief, I mean, the first off, the idea that all of the crops that are grown to feed the animals and not feed people isn't entirely true. I mean, there is some truth to that. You know, some cereal grains and stuff like that are grown specifically to feed livestock. Some.
Right.
But a lot of what happens with a lot of this stuff is like, so up here where I live, which is North Dakota for some of the listeners that don't already know, we grow a lot of wheat, we grow a lot of soybeans, we grow a lot of cows. Beef cows specifically, but there is some dairies up here too. So like a lot of the plant byproducts, you know, the shafts of the wheat stalks, the soybean plants themselves after the beans have been harvested off of it, those kinds of things, those go to the feedlots to be eaten by the cows because they can eat that no problem.
Yeah. It's funny how that makes them taste good too.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, like that's where part of that bunk comes in the first place. It's like, these cows are actually turning what would be agricultural waste into an agricultural product that is good for people.
Yeah, absolutely.
That would otherwise just be sitting in God only knows what kind of masses, decomposing, releasing all of this carbon and everything into the environment in the first place that they're all against anyway. Because let's face it, when we're talking about composting, I don't even want to hazard a guess as to how many millions of tons of agricultural waste would be there.
Yeah.
You know, across the country, not specifically my state. This is across the country in general. And then around the world on top of that, millions and millions of tons, probably hundreds of millions of tons of agricultural waste that at least a portion of is being converted into food by livestock.
What I'm hearing is that we should have more livestock.
Probably.
I mean, because if we could just feed them that agricultural waste, not want not, that would be environmental, wouldn't it?
Well, and that's just it. Like, if there was more livestock, there would be a very real possibility that some of the agricultural waste that isn't being utilized right now for it would begin to be utilized. Now, you would want some of it still for composting for other various things, but, you know, I mean, it's livestock, and especially the right livestock, actually reduces human waste. I mean, to use somebody else's thing real quickly, because this is also still a very 4th of July food, pigs.
Yeah, we're going to get to them, yeah.
Pigs eat anything, and I don't know if you or any of the other list, I'm sure some of the other listeners watched and or listened to Mike Rowe and Dirty Jobs.
Uh-huh, big fan.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, me too. There's a pig farmer that he worked with at one point who his pigs, he was out in Vegas or near Vegas. And he would go around to the casinos and collect their food garbage to feed to his pigs. So this is, and we know how big those damn casinos in Vegas are. They're huge.
Oh, yeah.
Hundreds and thousands of pounds of food waste probably daily from these places.
Yeah, right.
Seriously. He feeds them to his, he gets rid of them, gets rid of all that waste from the casinos for free so they don't have to pay anything. It's a benefit for them. And then he feeds them to his pigs, and his pigs have one of the better diets that you could give to a pig. And then he turns them into these beautiful pigs that he turns around, slaughters, and sells on the marketplace for other people to eat.
Agorism. Agorism.
Kind of, yeah. We'll
call it agorism.
I mean, more or less, purposes. Yeah.
That's pretty cool, actually.
You know,
you always hear about, you get some goats or sheep and they'll clean up your lawn. Like that's the extent to which people think that you can utilize animals for the betterment of like the neighborhood.
But I didn't even think of that. So much things. Well, yeah. and like a lot of poultry. Okay. So chickens.
Technically meat.
And chickens and guinea hens and turkeys and stuff like that. A lot of them eat insects. If you're in an area that has a lot of ticks, get yourself some birds, man. They will start destroying that tick population.
So why aren't we telling these fucking politicians who want us to eat bugs, why don't you just give the bugs to the chickens and we can eat more chickens? Because I'll eat more chicken. I love chicken. I'm a humongous fan. There's a very... And I don't want to drag us deeply into it, although you and I, it actually, there was an interaction between us on the timeline about chicken and meat. There was a big contentious debate about white meat versus dark meat. But what I really want to emphasize in that whole conversation is that chicken meat is vastly superior to any bug that I can think of, but they eat bugs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and here's where things become much more interesting, too. So... For those who didn't see the interaction, the contention was which is better, white meat or dark meat.
Which is better. Yes. Yeah,
and you said white meat. I contend that dark meat is.
Yes.
But here is the one thing that I will now begin to say as well. With truly like truly free-ranging foraging birds, those differences begin to dwindle.
Oh, you know what? I agree with you.
Yeah, the big reason there is such a pronounced difference between white and dark meat that most people eat from whatever their birds are they get, whether they're chickens or turkeys or ducks, although ducks, even commercially grown duck, it's almost all dark meat anyway. But you get the point.
Mm-hmm.
Any of these farm birds, they don't really... roam and forage. Even if you get free range, and that is going to be another one of those things that could set me off.
That's
there
one of those
easily.
Words. Yeah, that's one of those words. Not mean what it says.
Free range for the people that don't know is just basically labeling propaganda put out by the USDA and the FDA. I think it's almost exclusively the USDA, but the FDA might be involved. And even if they aren't, fuck the FDA anyhow. So. to be free range, the birds only need like 2 or 3 square feet to move around. Like it's nothing. Right. It's absolute horseshit.
Yeah, it's weird. Yeah, totally vile.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, like that is much better for the bird than some of the other conditions that they live in, because factory farming is disgusting. Yep. It is absolutely vile.
And gross.
Yeah. Yeah, it is vile on every level you want to use the word vile to describe. It's horrendous. So I will admit that the free range is better than that, but it's not tough to do. But if the birds truly roam free,
Right.
Then they're going to flap around more. They're going to walk around more. They're going to have much different things to eat. The differences between white and dark meat are going to not vanish, but considerably reduce.
It makes me recall that I was actually I had family members who had a farm. I guess they still do, my second cousins, but I haven't seen them in a very, very long time. And it was geese and sheep. But they personally also had chickens. And there was a time when I I'm only recalling this because you brought up the fact that there's very little difference, and now I'm remembering exactly the taste. There was a time when they had personal like they raised the chickens for themselves only. They weren't farming mm-hmm. them really for anybody else. It was just for them to eat. And they happened to slaughter one of the chickens because the reason why I was there was because it was a big family get together. So I got to meet all the geese, and it was the first time I ever really contended with a goose, actually, probably now that I remember. And then there were sheep in the and they're awesome. They're some of the greatest animals that
sheep are great.
You know, wherever
geese are assholes.
Yeah, geese can really get fucked. But they slaughtered a chicken, and they prepared the chicken whole roasted chicken, just like that. And it was one of the many pieces that we were eating, and it was phenomenal. I mm-hmm. remember that there was, as you say, like almost no difference because I'm not a dark meat eater. Like I do eat it in certain recipes where it's just unbeatable, but I will not go for it on my plate. You know, at random, it's just not a texture that I prefer or flavor.
Sure.
A lot of the ones that I eat. And with that chicken, I distinctly remember being like, it had the buttery like depth of dark meat, but it had the tender softness of white meat. It was a great, mm-hmm. like great combination of the two things. So you're absolutely right about that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean,
and the eggs were orange. Oh my God.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's another thing that is just, it's so, I am fucking stoked. So as many know, I have moved out to the country recently. Next year is when I should be able to get my chickens. And I am so pumped about that.
Oh man. That's awesome. Yeah. You know, Triggy, shout out mm-hmm. to Triggy, has chickens.
Love that guy.
I mean, he's got a whole thing. Yeah, I love him too, man. He's such an inspiration, and he's always smiling, which is the thing I always look for in people, because those are good people. He has chickens, mm-hmm. and I think he might have geese at this point, but he definitely has
he's
chickens.
Got quail.
Oh, quail. That's a great one. Mm-hmm. I'd have a couple of them too. Man, those chickens are delightful, his chickens.
Yes.
Like, I see videos of them, and I'm like, how would you not want to have a bunch of these ladies out in the backyard to go and say hi to every morning? I don't think I don't know if he plans on slaughtering any of them or if he just really uses them for the eggs.
I think his plan, and he can correct me if I'm wrong whenever he hears this.
I would be very curious. Yeah, I would be very curious.
But I believe he's pretty much doing it exclusively for the eggs. I mean, I'm sure he's going to slaughter some occasionally, but if I remember correctly from talking with him before, he's doing it for the eggs, and this is the same reason he got the quails. Because quail eggs for restaurants and stuff can be a pretty big moneymaker. Those things are fucking expensive.
Yeah, and they are. I hate how much I like them, man. They're fun.
They're delicious.
Yeah, but they're good, but they're fun. You see one of those little cute little eggs on your plate, and you're like, sold. Mm-hmm. I'm in.
Yep.
That's great. Yeah, so
yeah, that
you get
that
a good
cute little egg is
them,
like
huh?
$1.50.
Woo! Jeez. And and there's indistinguishable, in my opinion, flavor from a chicken egg.
Pretty close, yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm. man, that's funny. All right, let's move away from chickens to the next animal, which you had alluded to before. A very fact-filled animal. Something that I knew for a long time. There was a guy named Vladimir the Great. He's a Russian, probably, from
Kiev.
I
would assume.
And
some kind of Eastern European.
For sure. And he was, I think he was some sort of a horse riding warrior man. And he was a pagan. I think he was probably a Tengrist, praise to the goose god, in fact. And yeah, which by the way, that's true. You can look that up. The Mongolians, those guys, Genghis Khan and whatnot, they prayed to a goose. Go look that up. So there was a guy named, all right. So Vladimir, He goes to the Middle East because he's interested in trying to convert to Islam. And one day he's hanging out with the imam and they're about to go eat and he orders pork and everybody looks at him like, no, man, no, 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 no. And he was like, what? Wait, what? And they were like, no, man, we don't do that. And he was like, you don't eat pork? And they were like, no, it's against the rules. And the meeting concludes. He goes back home. He converts to Christianity.
Yeah, I was going to say, this sounds an awful lot like one of the early Russian czars. Because yeah, I seem to recall this, the story of some czar, and that's why he picked Eastern Orthodox Christianity, because it's like, wait, these other religions limit what I can eat? Fuck that.
Yes, yeah, that was his choice. And it was it was an informed decision on his part, and that brings us to the mighty pig, the wonderful pig, which, did you know, here's a good thing that we did an episode on, the McRib. I found this out recently. Mm-hmm. The quantity of McRibs available is inverse related to the price of pork right then and there.
That sounds about
right.
It's like
debunking Mises. They've got a machine somewhere in the McDonald's factory that does mathematical calculations at the speed of light about what the current price of pork is and exactly how much needs to be shipped to the stores. It's a sick system specifically for the McRib. It's freakish. And I, also the McRib, I hope it's made out of pork, but it gets us to the discussion of perhaps the greatest of meats, the other white meat.
Yeah. Well, especially when you're talking cookouts like we're talking about right now. And using that word makes me, I want to take a brief detour real quick.
Please. Yes, please. Another, that's a content. Dude, food is very contentious. Please.
Well, this is something my Southern friends will be able to agree with
yes.
me on. Mm. A cookout versus a barbecue.
Very different.
Okay. They are different things because barbecuing is a very specific form of cooking. Now, there's going to be all kinds of arguments amongst people who know barbecue as to what can and cannot constitute a barbecue, because the Texans, for example, love to do brisket barbecues, which is a beef brisket, you know, and then some of the others are like, nope, the only thing that can be barbecued is chicken and pork. Otherwise, it's not barbecue. I personally hold the more loose definition of barbecuing in that anything can be barbecued. It is the sure. style in which you are cooking it that matters at that point.
Yeah,
which is
I agree.
Which is low temperature, indirect yeah. heat, usually but not necessarily lots of smoke.
Yeah, yeah, I basically and now agree
anything
there.
Anything else is not necessarily a barbecue. If you are right. throwing some steaks on a grill directly over a fire, that is great. I encourage you to do it because they taste amazing. That is not barbecuing.
So here's actually a moment of unity. You were talking about what your Southern friends can agree with. Hopefully my Southern friends can agree with me here and we can have a good handshake on it. There's a lot of people in the South who use the word Coke to refer to all kinds of sodas or pop, right?
Yep.
So that's a thing that sticks in a lot of people's craws, but they're unapologetic about it. What I yep. learned was people from the East Coast, specifically the northern portion of the East Coast, use the term barbecue in the same way that the term Coke is used, where
they do.
After you say it, it is then specified what kind of things are going to be there. And that is how in context you determine whether you're going to a barbecue or a cookout. Like I've had exactly this where you go, yeah, let's do a barbecue for Labor Day. All right, cool. What do you want to get? I don't know, some ribs. Maybe we'll get some steaks. So you know the ribs we're mm-hmm. going to be smoking. Like that's how you know, okay, so it is a barbecue. But there's
it is a barbecue
like,
where we're just also doing other things.
Right. It, yes. Right. So hopefully that can be a point of I've been exploring this idea in my other philosophical adventures. The idea of unsolidarity, where the only unity you have is no unity at all. And I think we can all agree that if they keep using Coke to mean all forms of soda and we keep using barbecue to mean any kind of cookout, then specified later, we can at least begin to understand one another from a cultural perspective.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Well, and that's the other thing too, that's important with that is like, this is also different cultures. I, as many know already, am an annoying, elitist,
avid,
pedantic traditionalist when it comes to food. Like, and I freely admit all of those things. But I have no problems experimenting, but my terminology, like, I was classically trained by some French people.
Right, you're classically trained. It's a little bit right. I was going to say
by literal Frenchmen. By literal Frenchmen as well. Like, there are just some things that if you start calling things certain things, I just it's a Pavlovian response practically at this point. I can't help it.
The birthplace of postmodernism, France, also produces the most elitist definitional chefs. Very interesting.
You know, I think there's probably a reason postmodernism came from France. Let's just put it that way.
I mean, really, several things that I don't want to specify. I think it's funny to wonder.
Though I was meaning more specifically, kind of as a rebellious moment where postmodernists kind of nothing means anything.
In contrast to the traditional
French mindset of everything's meaning is set in fucking stone.
I like imagining in the way that like Hitler failing art school is the crux there. Like for postmodernism, it's some asshole chef scolding some future postmodernist over how to best make a bechamel.
Michel Foucault working as a busboy someplace.
Yeah, making a bechamel. A bechamel has no cream.
Gets his ass chewed out by some freaking
some dickhead
chef, and he's just like, "Fuck these sheets! Nothing means anything anymore."
I like that. That's good. I like that a lot. Here's a fact for you: the oldest cat recorded ever to have lived for the longest amount of time, 38 years. The owner of the cat credited eggs and bacon in the diet to what did it.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah, that's a weird one. So I'm not a dietitian for animals, so I'm not gonna make an official recommendation, but maybe look into it if your cat likes bacon so much. Maybe don't salt it. That would probably be a good idea.
I mean, you have to salt it, otherwise it's not gonna be bacon.
Not for the cat. Oh my god. Well, the cat won't know. You don't have to tell the cat. You don't have to tell the cat that.
Fair enough, I guess. Yeah, there's a lot of weird shit like that, too. I remember, like, one of the oldest women years ago. She was some French woman, like, 110 or something like that. And was like, "What's your diet like?" "Well, I smoke a cigar every day. I usually drink a full bottle of wine." He was just like, what the
dude, it's
going on?
Because you're literally because your system is so depressed. They say you only get a certain number of heartbeats, and in a sense, I believe that. If you depress your heartbeat just enough where you can keep going, but, you know, it's really slow, you'll live for a long time, I think.
Could be. Who knows?
Now, this is a real contentious subject, or should be, depending on whether or not you want it to be. Bacon means completely different things in all three of the major regions that use the term. In the UK, it means something different from what it is in America and Canada. It's a weird little thing. In Canada, as you know, it's closer related to ham.
Correct.
In the UK, it's closer related, and I want to make sure that I get this right. Well, in America, obviously, it's closer related to pork belly. And British bacon, listen to this, a lot of people don't know this, is actually back bacon. So it's got the chew of Canadian bacon, which a lot of people like in their bacon. I'm not a chewy bacon guy, but a lot of people are. Mm-hmm. But it has the flavor of the belly bacon. Mm-hmm. So it's a maybe get yourself some British back bacon at some point.
Go ahead. The British and the American ones, and now I've not had the British, and I didn't even actually know that was what they tended towards was back bacon. Like, I knew that was a thing, but I've never had it, and I didn't know that was the more predominant British version of it. But I would imagine the processes are still very, very similar in the manufacture of.
They
Canadian
look the
bacon's
same.
A little bit, well, I mean, I was about to say Canadian bacon's a little bit different, but it really isn't, because, I mean, the process for making a ham which is, like you mentioned, very close to what Canadian bacon is basically the same as making bacon as we're used to it anyway. It's just the curing times and conditions are a little bit different.
And I think isn't Canadian bacon, I think, is made out of something else, right? It's not made out of belly.
I have no idea.
Pork, maybe loin or something like that.
Probably like a tenderloin or something like that would be my guess.
Oh, now I want a tenderloin. Which throw one of those delicious. On your cookout in your cookout on your cookout machine.
Oh yeah. So that's something too, is like barbecuing anything, you can do it, man. And it's,
you really can.
Oh yeah. It's all going to be good. Now, one thing, since we're talking about bacon, that I do want to talk about a little bit when it comes to doing a lot of your barbecuing, grilling, whatever, is giving some of your cuts of meat either a light or an extended cure before you do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which I've been starting to do that.
Mm-hmm. Which, for the people who are unfamiliar, you can do either what's called a dry cure or a wet cure. They're going to be real easy to figure out which is which. So a dry cure is you just rub it down with salt. You usually need to rub down whatever it is you're doing with salt every day for anywhere from like a day or two to several weeks. And then the salt will soak in, and through the chemical process of the salt being absorbed and everything, it does kind of cook it a little bit on its own as well. And then a wet cure, you just dissolve the salt in a liquid, usually water, and then you submerge whatever it is you're curing in that.
Now when you cure, do you spice when you are doing the curing process?
Absolutely. A basic ham or bacon, you're going to take, you know, for bacon, you're going to either use, you know, like the back or the belly. I've also had a pork jowl bacon, and that was very interesting.
Guanciale is a loved favorite among my people.
Yeah, it's pretty good. But you know, you just take that at the most basic. You take whatever your cut of meat is, you know, a shoulder or a haunch or something like that. If you're making a ham, you put it in your cure, which is just salt and water. If you're doing a wet cure, or just salt, and that's it. Now, if you want to start adding some flavors and spices and stuff like that, absolutely, it's great to do. I've made my own corned beef a couple times.
And my God, dude, I made corned beef last summer. What a banger. It's so good.
I ended up last summer creating on my own. I totally didn't create it on my own. I did not come up with this idea myself. I just realized.
So you made this one on your own, huh? So this is an original creation by you, huh? Okay.
I've done this so many times where it's like, oh, I wonder if I were to do this with blah, blah, blah instead, what it would be like. And I look it up later. I'm like, oh, this is just this thing.
It, yeah.
No, I made pastrami.
Uh-huh. Oh.
Is basically what happened. Because pastrami is basically corned beef that you then smoke.
Yes.
And that's what I did.
I thought you smoked it first. Oh, so you smoke it first. Oh, I thought you smoked it first.
No, after.
Okay.
After. Okay. Yeah. So you cure it first for a little while, and then you rub it down with whatever your spices are, then you throw it on the smoker, and voila, pastrami. See, I didn't realize that's how pastrami was made.
Me neither. I thought it was the other way around.
So I was like, oh, cool. Okay, so yeah, I'm going to make a corned beef, and then I'm going to smoke it, and that should be really awesome. And it obviously was, because pastrami is great.
Yeah, pastrami is really fucking good, dude. It's one of the best things ever invented.
Oh, it's so good.
God, I love deli meat. Hey, we should... Oh. Unfortunately... Deli meat is one of the only things that is not appreciated at a cookout just because it has no place in one. There, unfortunately, in the American tradition, there's no place for a sandwich party. I've never heard of such a thing.
See, you go to the wrong cookouts then, my friend.
Well, I got to get more invites for sure. I got to be getting invited to some better parties then.
Because I was going to say, I know there's been plenty of times we've done stuff like that and... Yeah, you got like 20 people coming over, so it's like, okay, so we're going to make burgers and potato salad, you know, enough for everybody to have some, right? Yeah. Everybody brings something. Yeah, so it's kind of potluckish, basically.
Yeah, I love that.
Which is fantastic. Like, more people should do things like that for cookouts. It's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful experience. But, you know, so somebody, you know, maybe they're busy because they've got, like, you know, this happened several times with some friends of the family. Like, you know, they had three kids and both of the parents were working, so they didn't really have time to make something. So they'd stop by the grocery store and they'd pick up a deli meat and cheese tray, you know, one of the big ones or something like that, and some buns, and be like, bam, little sandwiches.
Mm-hmm,
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And,
man, I
you know, usually things like
it.
That, usually things like that were just like ham, turkey, roast beef, so it wasn't anything super awesome, like pastrami and salamis and stuff like that. But, you know, the concept is still the same, and there's nothing saying that you couldn't put pastrami and roast beef and some smoked turkey or something like that on something like that and bring it too. And to me, anyway, I think that very much so fits the theme of a summertime cookout with your friends where you're just sitting around, you're eating some food, maybe got some tunes going, playing some games, having some beer, having some brewskis, stuff like that.
Yeah, if there was in my personal phenomenal worldview, in my experience, there are two things I would add to a cookout, which, again, I'm delighted to hear that these things might never even be added to most people's cookouts because they've always been that way. But they are, number one, sandwiches, and number two, cocktails. And if if both of those things are done at most people's cookouts, then I'm even happier to know I'm moving out of New York at some point. So, because
cocktails,
that's what I need in my life.
Yeah, cocktails, I don't know that it's super common, but it's definitely not unheard of. Just
nobody
because,
would be like, oh, a cocktail? And nobody would judge you for it. In fact, they'd probably be happy you brought them.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, the main reason is usually, you know, at least up here, if you're having a cookout, you're having it at somebody's house or you're having it at a park someplace and there's not a lot of room to really be mixing cocktails. So you bring some beers or you bring some wine or you bring something like that that's nice and easy to serve up and that people will enjoy them. So, I mean, they're not common, but man, there's been more than one occasion at cookouts that I've been at where a couple people bring, you know, a bottle of whiskey or a bottle of vodka or a bottle of gin or something like that.
Yeah,
you know, maybe not a lot of mixers to where they're making fancy cocktails. Maybe it's just some orange juice and some
cola.
That's
what I want. Yeah, dude, if I could have a nice gin and juice with my sandwich and my ribs, I'm a happy man. I'm a very happy man. Maybe a bacon sandwich too. Man, excellent stuff. I knew a guy who would buy. So he had a canning machine for like sodas.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And what he would do,
that's pretty rad,
is he would buy Cokes and he would open the Coke, crack it open. He would pour it into the can. He would add, I don't know what kind of whiskey it was. Let's, for the joke, say it was like Maker's Mark or something. He would add whiskey in, and then he would can it, and he would sell them like as a joke, because he had a canning machine because he got to take one because he used to work at a factory, and once that it was all dissolving, people got to take shit home. I use in quotations, but he so he had that. And that was the gag, is that he was like canning his own Jack and Cokes and handing them out.
That's fantastic.
And I think the best way that you could get the cocktail into the cookout setting is by canning things.
Mm-hmm.
Very, because everybody would want a cocktail, but as you mentioned, the
difficult
the
to do.
Geography doesn't support it. Yeah, there's not a lot of space. Yeah, not a lot of space. So yeah. I mean, it would be excellent to start doing
that.
Bring the cocktails in.
See, now that's agorism right there.
yeah, for real. I don't know if what his return was on those things, but I'm sure it.
Man, even if all you were doing is breaking even.
Yeah, that's excellent. You're bringing a lot of joy to people's lives. Oh yeah, for sure.
At no monetary cost to you, man, that'd be awesome.
Super
awesome.
That'd
be so cool.
Awesome. Is there any final words that you'd like to say on meat in general?
eat more of it.
I know. Wow.
You know, and enjoy it. Like, so many times, and this is something that bugs me with Americans kind of in general. Like, so often people around here, like, they eat simply to fuel themselves. And don't get me wrong. You need the fuel. I'm not saying don't eat for fuel. And there are certainly times where, you know, you're at work and you're on your lunch break. You can't sit there and enjoy your meal for the next hour and a half because you're on the clock there. Like, that's fine. But man, like, enjoy it. Experiment with it too. Like, so as we've mentioned a couple times, like, I've been classically trained. I've been a professional chef for a very long time, like 20 years roughly. Okay. I've made a lot of really damn good food. I have also made a lot of really, really bad food. Don't be afraid to make something.
Tell stories.
Yeah, don't be afraid to make bad food sometimes. You know, it happens. Like, experiment, play around with things. Like, find out if you like two flavors mixed together, or if you know you like these two flavors mixed together, or three flavors, or six flavors, whatever the hell it is, mixed together on one thing. Try it on something else. See if you like it there too.
That's,
you know,
that
don't
is
don't
the fat oh, Conkin sorry. Philosophy, my friend.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I was listening to you and Aches talk about that. And I was like, that sounds really good. Like, you guys,
dude, you haven't made one. You should definitely make it. Dude, Rollo told me it was great. That's what Rollo said. Like, all he texted was, it was great. Yeah, and Rollo is difficult to please with going outside of the box in some ways. And he was
And just out of general principle, he doesn't like to give you compliments. So
No, he doesn't. That's very... Well, and it was a private text message.
Makes it a little easier. But.
Yeah, a little easier for him. But yeah, exactly. That's the principle of it, man. Dude, you have to make one, and if you do, you gotta add it to the picture list for sure.
I absolutely will. Absolutely will. It's just one of those things I haven't gotten around to yet. But it's one of those things too, where as soon as I was listening to it and all that, and I was just like, again, having been around food for as long as I have, it's like, I know a good recipe when I see or hear one. I was like, this is gonna be good. Like, there's unless you make a mistake during the preparation, it's gonna be good. Like, this is going to be absolutely amazing. And that's another one of those things too. It's like, I'm sure there were plenty of people who have either listened to that episode of Aches' podcast, and if you're not listening
to Aches.World, which it will be linked in the description. Yes.
Yeah, and if you're not listening to Aches.World right now, you need to. Aches is amazing.
Yes.
Yes. He's a fantastic human being, and you should listen to his podcast. But at any rate, you know, whether you listened to it there or you saw it afterwards, I'm sure there were a bunch of people who saw that or heard it and went, that sounds disgusting. Cool, fine, think that, try it anyway. A professional story on that same vein, briefly. Years and years ago, I was working at a little sports bar here in North Dakota. And one of the things the owner wanted to add to the menu were hot dogs. And specifically, he wanted some deep fried. Deep fried hot dogs. Sure, no problem. I was the kitchen manager at the time, so some of this was my responsibility to come up with some of this shit, which, no problem. This was well into my career. So we did some things, and they were good, and blah, blah, blah. So at one point, I was like, okay, guys, I'm going to try one here for you, and you need to just try it and keep an open mind. So all I did, so for our deep-fried hot dogs, all we did was we took them, we put whatever went inside them with them, wrapped it up in a flour tortilla and deep fried it, right?
What? Nothing, okay.
Nothing too
that's
terribly
not
crazy.
What I would think at all. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you wrap it up in the flour tortilla, you drop it into the basket before the basket goes into the oil, and so then it kind of presses in on itself, and as it cooks, it seals itself together. The tortilla seals itself together.
So smart. Yeah, mm-hmm. Okay.
So I was like, okay, here's what we're going to do. I took one of our hot dogs, and they were these really nice, like 100% beef Franks. They were absolutely wonderful. I took one, threw it in a tortilla. I just threw some blue cheese crumbles in it, nothing else. Wrapped it up and deep fried it. After it was done, I pulled it out and I threw it in the cinnamon sugar that we use for one of our desserts. And I rolled it around in it so it was coated in cinnamon sugar on the outside. I was like, here you go, guys. Try this. And they're like, that sounds really gross. I'm like, shut up and try it.
Yeah, blue cheese, though, can do some very surprising things. Yeah.
Well, and especially when you start mixing, contrasting it specifically with the sweet and the cinnamon. And they all tried it, and they just looked at me like I had... Oh, I absolutely loved it. They were just like, what kind of fucking voodoo did you work? I was like, see, I told you it was going to be amazing.
No, go ahead.
No, that was it. I was just like, see, I told you it was going to be amazing. Also, we should not try and sell this because most people will react exactly like you do and they will never order one.
They'll never order one. It's funny when you were telling it, I was thinking, you know what sounds good with this? Cream cheese. And you were like, nope, even stronger cheese. I was like, okay, there you go.
Yeah,
think tortilla. I would have thought you battered them.
Nah, that would be such a pain in the dick.
And if you're making corn dogs, see, because one time I had cream cheese filled corn dogs, as in they took they took a dowel and cored the dog just a tiny bit, and then they injected it with the cream cheese. This was at some it's called Smorgasburg. It's in Williamsburg. It's a big food festival they do every Sunday. It's so good though, dude. There's people come from all over the country to be like, here's weird shit. So they did that. The other one that was a real hit was a ramen burger where the bun was made out of ramen. It was nuts. It was so good.
That sounds real weird. I'd try it, but that sounds
it's weird. All weird, but it's like that. It's like, it's all weird, but it's like, fuck it. Let's try it. And it's almost never disappoints. So they had beer battered hot dog, like you were saying, really good quality hot dogs. They made them themselves. And then they cored them just a little bit. I don't know what they were doing, by the way, with the cored pieces of meat. Maybe they were giving them to the dog or something. But they filled it with cream cheese and then they deep fried it. And it was absolutely out of control. It was so good.
Huh. That's interesting.
Yeah, it might have been Smorgasburg might actually be where the strangeness in my experimentation comes from. Now that I'm thinking of it, because I had a lot of weird things there. But yeah, that's the essence of it.
And you know, I do have to say that is, most people know my opinions on the big cities. I'm not a fan. but I do have to say that is the one benefit, like I will never, ever, ever deny for people that live in big cities, is you get the ability to try and expose yourself to all kinds of wacky shit when it comes to food like that. Because, you know, like I said, one of the big reasons professional cooks and chefs have such a developed palate where they can taste the slightest hints of some of the most subtle flavors in something is because they eat everything all the time. They're constantly trying weird shit. Some of it works, some of it doesn't, some of it's only mediocre. You know, it runs the gamut just like anything else, but like we're constantly trying and improving and altering and all this kinds of stuff. Like, just as a real simple example, like I make some of my own spice mixes that I sell, right, at the farmer's market and stuff like that.
Yeah, sure.
And my steak seasoning that I sell there, like this is one I've used in restaurants for years, and it took me probably like, I don't know, 6 or 7 years to get the balance where I wanted everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've got a barbecue rub that I've been working on probably twice as long.
Oh.
And at this point, it's pretty solid. Like,
I absolutely love it. I use that on my ribs. I've used it.
You wouldn't be happening to bringing any of this to Childeberg, which already happened and was a lot of fun, by the way.
No, I'm not, because I'm not able to make it this year.
Okay. Well, when you do make it, I will pay you in whatever your preferred fiat or, you know, good money is, whatever you want.
Well, we could probably arrange for me to send you some under such circumstances too.
That would be delightful. and excellent.
Yeah. But you know, I put that on everything because I've finally gotten it to where it works for everything. Like I've done barbecue chickens, I've done ribs, I've done briskets, I've done roasts, I've done pulled pork with it. Like, it's just,
he's done it all.
And that's where it comes down to. It's like, if you want to be able to taste all of these different things, you gotta try them, which means some of this shit's gonna taste real weird. And you may not like it the first, second, or even third time. I encourage mm-hmm. you to try it at least twice. Unless it makes you, like, literally gag or throw up or something like that, I definitely encourage you to try something at a minimum of two times.
Yep, for sure. Didn't know I liked half the foods that I really like today without forcing myself to try them a few times.
One of my favorite vegetables is Brussels sprouts. At this point, my parents absolutely hated them. We never ate them when I was growing up, and I got their hatred of it for the longest time. So, you know, it was one of those things where I had to kind of work myself past, like, these are gross, because, you know, that's just what I've heard my whole life. And my parents have thankfully not steered me wrong really that much before. So it's like, they can't be that wrong. And I tried them, like, they were. These are delicious. It's little cabbages. I love cabbage. This is great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. God, food and exploration are very much related, for sure. Mm-hmm. If you're not mm-hmm. an adventurous person, you're not going to be an adventurous eater. But everybody mm-hmm. knows going on adventures is a lot of fun. It can mm-hmm. be scary, but it's worth it.
Oh, absolutely is. It absolutely is scary.
And you can try it with meat, but don't try it with bugs.
I mean, try it with bugs, too. Why the hell not?
Well, not if someone else told you to.
Well, maybe not if they told you to, especially not in the context like we talked about it earlier. Like, you have to do this or you're a bad person. No, fuck yet.
Yeah.
That's not why. It's like, hey, you want to try these crickets or grasshoppers or whatever? Because they're kind of an interesting thing. Yeah.
I'll do a cricket. I'm not afraid of a cricket.
Yeah. I absolutely would too.
Cover them in chocolate. Absolutely. Here's the thing. The thing is, they fry those crickets to the point where there's no meat in them. It's just like crunch.
There's not really meat in them to begin with because they're bugs.
I know. But I have heard that they do pop if you bite them and they're not cooked, which doesn't sound super delightful to me.
It sounds a little weird.
A little weird. Let's close this out on a not necessarily meat-related, but food-related thing. What is the weirdest food that you've ever eaten, whether you ended up liking it or not?
I suppose that kind of depends on how you're going to define weird in this instance.
So what I'm envisioning is the thing is set before you on a plate and it looks strange. It tastes strange. Now, whether or not you enjoyed it after you saw it and ate it separate, but it looks and tastes, the first word you'd use, probably strange. I'll give you mine while you think. Mine is balut.
Yeah.
It's a Philippine recipe. It's a duck egg fertilized with the little duck fetus still inside of it.
Yeah, I've heard of that before.
It's not very good. I only tried it because a friend ordered it. They liked it. I did not.
I cannot say that that's one of those things I'd probably be willing to try.
Not me.
To me, it kind of ranks up there with like foie gras.
Because of the background quality of how it's made, or just it's kind of an inapproachable gross?
No, because it's... No, I've eaten foie gras before. It's absolutely delicious.
Oh, is it?
Oh, yeah. It's As long as you like liver, foie gras is delicious. For those who don't know, foie gras, what it is it's usually goose liver, but sometimes it's duck liver. But the animal has been fed and usually force-fed so much that the liver becomes engorged. The texture becomes much, much softer. It's almost buttery. So as long as you like the taste of liver at all, foie gras is absolutely amazing because the taste, the texture, it's fantastic. My problem with it is ethically. Because like I said, you have to force feed these animals. And like these livers get so engorged that the animals can't move. And that's where my problem kind of with that balut would come in is like, okay, so you're taking a fertile egg, allowing the baby to develop for probably like a week
halfway. Halfway.
At most, and then killing. It's like, that's kind of fucked up.
It's a little fucked up. And I asked them what it was like. I was like, so you're eating that, so what's that like? And they were like, it's kind of chicken-y. I was like, well, then why don't you get chicken?
Yeah.
And why don't you sort of chicken?
Yeah, at the very least, with foie gras, you can kind of go, well, yeah, but you cannot get this in any other way.
No.
This is something entirely unique.
I had a synthetic foie gras before I've ever had a real foie gras, and I liked it, but I can't imagine it's anything because it didn't taste anything like liver.
Yeah. Well, and this doesn't taste, I mean, obviously with it being a bird liver versus a cow's liver or something like that, it's going to taste different anyway. But
well, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, it's, like I said, it's something very different. I enjoyed it, but I will neither eat nor work with it for ethical reasons.
So foie gras is that for you?
Maybe. It's certainly one of the more exotic things that I've eaten. I would say the one that I would look and it, this isn't even really all that weird, but probably one of the more weird looking things that I've eaten has been, squid.
Oh, squid. Yeah. And weird for a lot of people. I like them.
Yeah.
I like them a lot.
I absolutely loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Oh, stuff them in my face.
Oh, and I would say probably actually a tie for the most weird things that I've eaten. Squid would be one. The other would be raw oysters.
Now I can't do an oyster. Yeah. I can't do an oyster in any form. I've tried. Yeah. Delicious. They provoke bad things in my belly
region. And that's fair. You know,
I've tried the adventure. I scaled the mountaintop and I got winded and I went back down.
Yeah, see, and that's fair. Like, you know, you've tried a couple times and gone, nope, this just isn't for me. And, you know,
it's just not for me. Yeah.
Not everything's going to be the same for everyone, and that's cool.
Reaction that I have with like Pepsi and like stuff it's weird for me. Like, there's like people like, oh, you don't like ice cream? It's like because I don't like the vast majority of ice creams. I like four flavors of ice cream and then I will like revolt at every other flavor. I don't know why. And people are like, why? I was like, I don't know. I've tried them. They just don't. It just doesn't connect. Sometimes it just doesn't connect, but it's okay. Fair. Everything is welcome at the cookout. You should probably, if you're going to do a potluck cookout, you should probably confirm with everybody going whether or not they have allergies, because you don't want to be in one of those situations.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, even if it's something that it's like, okay, there's only one person that's got this allergy. Well, you make sure you tell that one person if you're the one bringing the thing they're allergic to. It's like, I know you can't eat this. But everybody else loves it, so I brought it for them. But just a reminder, this has shellfish or egg or whatever the hell it is they're allergic to it.
Tony, you can't breathe. Yeah, you don't want that at your cookout. That'll ruin the whole thing.
Yeah.
All right.
EpiPens, not good cookout fare.
No, you don't want. Once the EpiPen comes out, you have to imagine the cookout is either going to slow or get canceled.
Yeah, possibly
both. You have to call it off. Yeah, you might have to call it off. But let us happy 4th of July to those who observe, and a happy meat day to everybody else. Mm-hmm. And what else we have? I to this day have never found a way to end this program, and I actually don't know where this program will be manifesting. So thank you for coming on. Mike, I appreciate it.
I am glad to be on once again.
Yes, you are in contention alongside Steppy, although I think Steppy is perhaps one ahead of you in how many episodes he's been on, but I think you might be in second place right now for appearances on this podcast, on the main show, and on Aaron's show. You're one behind Steppy, who has now also been on the Patreon. So we'll get you on the Patreon, and there'll be a contest.
There we go. Coming for you, Steppy. Coming for you.
Mm-hmm. We're calling it the Grand Slam.
It's only appropriate, though, since he and I are two of the OGs.
Oh, yeah. Yes, there's not many OGs around. You can find them, and they're like wizards, man. When you see them, you'll know. You'll know. So keep your eyes out for the OGs. Do you have anything you want to plug?
Sure. Let's go ahead and plug the old Twitteroni. You can find me at Corsair Michelle, CorsairMichel.
Now, the only issue with that is that this is coming out probably on July 4th, although again, I'm not 100% sure, but probably on July 4th. If it doesn't, then go check. But on July 4th, if you don't exist, you might have gotten banned because it's happened, what, three times in the past year? Oh. 365
days? Oh, in the last year? Three.
So if it changes, you can find it in the description.
I'm on account number 6 overall, though.
Wow, and, that's a grand slam.
Yeah, I can't keep control.
There's not many I know more than you. I think Conan is probably the only guy who's run through more accounts.
Lida.
Is Lida still on Twitter?
No, he hasn't been on forever. But
oh my God, what a throwback. Shout out to Lida if you're listening, brother. You're not missing much, though, if you're not on Twitter. No. It's a dumpster fire, as it's always been.
No, as always. As always.
Let's pull out. Oh, yes, go ahead.
Oh, I got one last plug real quick. Yes. Even though I don't put stuff on it very often, I do have a website, and it is thestatelesscook.com.
Stateless Cook. Yes. All right, so go check all that out. It'll all be in the description for your ease and convenience. Listeners, thank you for tuning in. Please enjoy your meat and fight back against the bug menace. This is too much.
Fucking bugs.
Fucking bugs.